everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahushua, also known as Jesus, our Messiah. The name of this program is Cross the Border, and my name is Nicholas. These days, we're going through the book of Daniel, and we started that yesterday, spent 2 hours beginning our study in the book of Daniel, and I found that I really enjoyed it. I spent a lot of time studying up for it in the last couple weeks while I reran the Genesis Bible study that we did late last year. And we got to chapter 3 in the book of Daniel. So let's just jump right in, and we'll backtrack just a little bit so we can pick up the context of the scripture as we're going through it. Daniel 3:19. And it says, "Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spoke and commanded that they should heat the furnace 1 7 times more than it was wont to be heated." So here we are in the plain where Nebuchadnezzar has set up this image of himself, basically, over 100 feet high, according to their cubit. And the image is all gold. Of course, now, the image, we know where Nebuchadnezzar got that image from his dream, where he was the head of gold, but the image changed in the dream that he got from Yahuwah. So he made the whole image himself, and he called all of his employees, all of the state employees together. And being the tyrant that he was, you were employed by him. If he said you were employed by him, you didn't volunteer. As people volunteer basically today for their employment with the beast government in the nation where I live, you have to volunteer into it. But in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, well, he had slaves, and if he wanted your services, you were his employee. Otherwise, you would lose your head. That's kind of a tyrant he was. And boy, I'll tell you what, as we've been going through this, we found out that if Nebuchadnezzar got angry, you better look out, because everybody was just fearful that they would lose their head at any instant. And that's what we have going on here. Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed. You ever see someone get so angry that they just lose control? They turn red? I mean, you know, that they're just overcome, and they change right before your eyes. Well, that's what was going on with Nebuchadnezzar here. And he changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, these are some pretty famous fellows. You know, I've heard about them pretty much most of my life, and most people that have grown up in church at all have heard it while they were a child, because pretty much all of these great stories of faith have been relegated to childhood stories in the modern-day corporate church. But basically what we have going on here is an act of civil disobedience. You know, the government here is saying you must obey. You know, when we say jump, you say how high, basically. But Nebuchadnezzar, when he asked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to fall down when they heard the music and worship this image that he set up in the plain, well, they didn't do it. And then somebody, some good little government citizen snitched on him. You know, I call that kind of person a Nazi, because the Nazi knows that whoever gets busted in this instance is going to be thrown into that fiery furnace over there if they don't fall down and worship. So anyway, someone snitched on him, and they brought him forward, and Nebuchadnezzar gives these fellows another chance. He says, "Hey, look, here we are. Perhaps you guys didn't understand." And, and they told the king, they said, you know, it doesn't matter. If you throw us in the fiery furnace, we will not fall down and worship the image that you've set up, because we worship only the one true God, you know. That is Yahuwah. And so they played the music again, and the boys didn't fall down and worship. And like it says, then Nebuchadnezzar became full of fury, and his visage was changed against them. OK, because before he favored them. He put that they were in top positions in his government. But now, and you know, plus he has the whole, I mean, thousands of people. I mean, everybody that's in his service and his government has been gathered together in the plain there to show their allegiance to King Nebuchadnezzar by falling down to worship his image. And, you know, worship is an act of obedience. And I've discussed that. I say it all the time. Worship is an act of obedience. It didn't matter whether they did it in their heart or, you know, they might have gone, you know what, I hate this guy. I hate Nebuchadnezzar. But he's going to cut off my head or throw me in that fiery furnace if I don't fall down. I'm going to fall down. And he can think I'm worshiping, but I'm going to hate him all the time in my heart. You know, it didn't matter. Just so you did the act of obedience. Because that's what worship is. It is obedience. Despite your reason for doing it. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would not. And therefore, it says, then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their garter garments, and were cast in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and here's why it was urgent, because he was full of fury. And he said, heat that fire up 7 times. And it was urgent because, and the reason it was urgent, because everyone was rushing around trying to do what Nebuchadnezzar said, because they were afraid they were going to get thrown into the fire furnace, because that's the kind of guy that Nebuchadnezzar was. So, anyway, it was urgent. They heated up the fire as exceedingly hot, and it says that the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Another thing that happened while they were heating up the furnace 7 times, Nebuchadnezzar says, get your strongest men over here and bind these guys and throw them in. And like I said, I wouldn't want to be those guys because they had to get near enough the furnace to throw these guys in, and they died. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these three Yahudites, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king was astonished and rose up in haste and spoke and said to his counselors, didn't we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire furnace? And they answered and said to the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. And like I said, that's an astonishing statement for this pagan, godless, tyrant king to be making. You know, the very head of the mystery Babylon image. I mean, he sums up what Babylon and mystery Babylon is all about. The character of Nebuchadnezzar, because he is the head of gold in the image of Mystery Babylon, which encompasses all of the world governments from the beginning, from him, the head of gold, all the way down to when all of the governments of men are abolished forever. And we discussed that a little bit yesterday as we went through his dream, the image, and the interpretation. So if you miss that, you're going to have to go back and listen to the show from yesterday's archive. It's over there on the website, crosstheborder.org. So, anyway, Nebuchadnezzar, he comes near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and he spoke and he said, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come forth and come here. So they came out, they came forth out of the fire, and the princes and the governors and the captains and the counselors being gathered together saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power. Nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of the fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Well, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they stepped into that fiery furnace, when they refused to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's image, they had no clue that they were going to be delivered. And they said, well, if we're delivered, that's fine. And if we're not, if our God doesn't deliver us, that's fine too. We will still not worship the image. And you know, the fact is that throughout history, that most people that have come into a position like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where the choice was between your life, losing your life, those that can kill the body were standing before them and ready to kill their body, or falling down in worship, or during the Inquisition in history. And that's not to say that the Inquisition isn't still going on, because I believe it is going on. But in history, you can read like Justin, the Book of Martyrs, and you can see that they were ordered to recant or be burned at the stake, or whatever kind of death or torture that they had in store for them. And most of these people were not delivered in the flesh. They didn't come pass through the fire and come out with their mortal life intact like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Most of the time, it turns out differently. So when we do an act of civil disobedience, because that's what this was. I mean, you know, Babylon, the king, and all of his policemen there, you know, they were the government. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were committing an act of civil disobedience. The government said, you will break God's law. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego says, no, we will keep God's law, because God's law is higher than your law. And if we have to pay the price with our lives, well, forever is a long, long time, king. And you may take our mortal life from us. That's short, even if we live another 100 years. But forever is a long time, and we're not trading off this short mortal existence. Comfort, the comfort of this short mortal existence forever, you know, for a life that goes on forever with our Messiah in his kingdom, in heaven, forever. We're not trading that off. We would rather give up this short mortal existence than to give up the promise of our Heavenly Father. But as I said, most people throughout history have had not had that choice. And I made a statement. I said that the Inquisition is still going on today. And though it's not televised and it's not publicized, but today there are more Christians dying for their faith than have died throughout history. You have the Sudan. You have a few notable ones that are notable in certain parts of the Christian community, though most of the corporate church totally ignores the persecution and the death of many of those followers, remnant followers of Yahuwah, who give their lives for the gospel, because they will not recant. They will not change their religion. Some of the tools of the inquisitors are Islamic extremists who force people to accept the Islam religion or die. And those like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego of old time in this story, those faithful people, the remnant of Yahuwah, they will not recant, and their lives are required immediately. And hundreds of thousands, you know, have died in recent history, and there are thousands dying this year and every year. And if you just go back throughout recent history with the wars that have been brought about by the mystery Babylon government, you had the Civil War in America, and you've had World War I and World War II, and you look at who were the casualties of those wars. Who were the casualties, really? Well, you'll see the Jews were a major casualty, but there were as many fundamentalists Christians and Protestants killed, as there were Jews in World War II. But then you go back to World War I, and you find, and if you really dig deep into the history, you'll find out that the war had another purpose, and it really was a war on the saints and a war on those people who go against the mystery Babylon religion of the great beast. And that's all I'm going to say about that. You'll have to, you know, keep listening to the First Amendment Radio, Liberty Radio Live, and listen to some of the good programming on there, and you can learn some of these things. But our purpose here is to stick to the Scripture. So that's what we're going to do. And, you know, the thing is, there is a time coming, and it may come to this land where I live in. And I believe it will, it'll get here sooner or later. And as we have there's a lot to fear in this country. We see that all of our wealth is being raped from the nation. What was once the greatest and wealthiest nation on the earth is now the greatest debtor nation on the earth. I believe that an enemy is being raised up against America, and I have a feeling that the China is being set up as the next superpower. And, you know, we have the illusion that we are the superpower of the earth. But, you know, pay a little attention to what's going on over there in China. Truly, I believe China has already surpassed America. And, you know, I hate to say that, but I have to look at things realistically, and there's a reality. And just, you know, do a little search on China. Look into China and see what's going on over there. And I think you're going to see that there's something really big going on over there in China. And if China ever decides to collect on its debt, and that's why I think it's all being set up, because America is becoming now so indebted to China. And if their economy crashes, and they say America owes us these billions and billions of dollars, you know, they just might want to collect on their debt. And they may just feel like they have a right to come over here and take whatever they want. And I think about that. But it's kind of a scary thought. I'm so glad that I don't have to live in fear of that, because, you know, they may kill my body. Something may happen. Who knows? It may not even be in my lifetime. I don't know how long this can go on. But, you know, it's a wise thing to open your eyes and see what's going on. And hopefully that makes you draw closer to our Heavenly Father, and have more of a desire to live in His kingdom, to cross the border into His kingdom, to stay in His kingdom, and to live a life that pleases Him by desiring to live a life of obedience to Him. You know, by faith, choose to live a life of obedience to Him, looking forward to the promised redemption of your souls. Okay, well, let's get back to Daniel. And we finished chapter 3, and we're going to move on to chapter 4 here. Chapter 4 and verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, unto all the people, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show you the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Now here's Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, this guy, you know, what could he do? I mean, he has seen wonderful things from Yahuwah, the king of these Yahudites, these children of Judah, from Daniel and from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these four men, he set over his whole kingdom. And, of course, then Daniel delegated the ministry of the kingdom to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar loved these guys. But when he got this idea in his head that they should fall down and worship, he became enraged against them. They lived through the fiery furnace. So now Nebuchadnezzar is making this declaration. And I'll bet you he has a little help with this declaration. I can tell. I know who his top guys in government are. So anyway, this is the declaration that Nebuchadnezzar makes that Daniel has recorded for us here in chapter 4, starting in verse 1. And he says, I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. And I love that proclamation there. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. So the question is, when did it start and when does it end? Well, it's everlasting. It was from the beginning, and it will go on forever. It started with Adam and Eve's repentance in the Garden of Eden when their high priest showed up and made the sacrifice for them and preached to them a sermon and explained to them everything, so that we see that they were looking forward to the redemption, and they were looking forward to the promised seed through whom the Messiah would come. That's the evidence we have in the Word itself. And that's where the kingdom starts. That was the first ecclesia there, right outside the Garden of Eden, when they had the first sacrificial event with their great high priest. So his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. And his dominion is from generation to generation. I mean, he is truly the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and the God of all gods. You know, there's no one higher than him from generation to generation. And any dominion that anyone else has, well, they have it under him. He says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions upon my head troubled me. Therefore I made a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me to make known the interpretation of the dream. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at last Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. You know, and here you see that Nebuchadnezzar still doesn't get it. He's still talking about gods, plural. And there's something about this man is never going to change, you know. And I'll bet you, I have a sneaking suspicion that we're not going to see Nebuchadnezzar in the resurrection. I think that's fairly evident from reading about this man here. Even though sometimes he just says some, you know, astounding things, and sometimes you think, oh, that you might want to just actually like this guy, but you know, you didn't know him personally. And just if you meditate on his character for a while, from what we have here, you see that it's not likely that Nebuchadnezzar is going to show up in the resurrection. Anyway, he says, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and that no secret troubleth thee. Tell me the vision of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. Well, he should have called it Daniel first because of the prior experience, but, you know, still this is Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And so anyway, he's going to give Daniel the dream here now. Thus were the visions of my head in my bed. I saw and beheld a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof unto the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. And I saw in the vision of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven, and cried aloud, saying, thus, hew down the tree, cut off his branches, shake off his leaves, and scatter his fruit, lest the beasts get away from under it, and the fowls from in his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with the band, with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from a man's and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the beasts of men, He setteth up and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. And, you know, there's a pretty good clue there why a good man can't become president of the United States. Because he gives it to whomsoever he will, and he setteth up over it the basest of men. And he's talking about the one that ruleth in the kingdoms of men. He setteth up over it the basest of men. Very interesting. And here comes our first break. So we're going to pick up here on the other side of the break.
Who is this King of glory that pursues me with his love and haunts me with each hearing of his softly spoken words? And my conscience a reminder of forgiveness that I need. Who is this King of glory who offers it to me? King of angels, O blessed Prince of Peace, revealing things of heaven and all its mysteries. My spirit's ever longing for his grace in which to stay.
Sometimes our .com server goes down, so don't forget, we have a backup, firstamendmentradio.net.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the advanced Berkey Light Purifier by calling First Amendment Radio at 559-781-3773 or order on the web at firstamendmentradio.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
FirstAmendmentRadio.com has made available a very low-cost satellite system special just for First Amendment Radio listeners. In conjunction with Rick Satellite, you can now receive a complete system, including receiver, LNB, and small satellite dish, all for only $169 delivered to your door. Go to the FirstAmendmentRadio.com homepage and click on the satellite system link to order the First Amendment Radio Satellite System from Rick Satellite. Or, if you don't do internet, call Rick Satellite at 816-228-8255.
1801 and tell them you need the First Amendment Radio satellite system. Go to our homepage to order or call Rick Satellite at 816-228-1801. First Amendment Radio receives no compensation for this service.
I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. I said unto their children in the wilderness, walk ye not in the statutes of your fathers, neither observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am Yahweh your God, and walk in my statutes, and keep my judgments, and do them. Notwithstanding, the children rebelled against me, and they walked not in my statutes, neither kept my judgments to do them, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. They polluted my Sabbaths, and then I said, I would pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the wilderness. Nevertheless, I withdrew mine hand and wrought for my name's sake, that it should not be polluted in the sight of the heathen in whose sight I brought them forth. Because they had not executed my judgments, but had despised my statutes and polluted my Sabbaths, and their eyes were after their father's idols. Wherefore, I gave them also statutes that were not good, and judgments whereby they should not live.
Sinners in the hands. We're back. You're listening to Cross the Border. My name is Nicholas. My website is crosstheborder.org. And we're going through the book of Daniel. We started it last time, so if you want to catch up with us, you can listen to the archives there at the website, crosstheborder.org. Now we're on chapter 4 of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar is telling his dream. This is by decree is the matter for the watchers, and again, he's telling the dream still. And demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the king may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdoms of men, and giveth to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basis of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now though thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof, forasmuch as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour. He was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. Yes, I wonder why. Well, we're going to find out why his thoughts troubled him. The king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, the dream... He said, my lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. So what he's saying is that you're not going to like it, because it's not a good thing for you. And that's why he was astonished and probably didn't want to speak, because Nebuchadnezzar has quite a temper. And if he hears something he doesn't like to hear, but now he's telling him, I want to hear it anyway. Don't worry about it. Daniel, he's calling him Belteshazzar. So he continues, and he says, the tree that thou sawest withdrew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and it was meat for all, and under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of heaven had their habitation. It is you, O king, that are grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And Nebuchadnezzar likes to hear this stuff, this part. And whereas the king saw a watcher and a holy one coming down from heaven, saying, hew down the tree and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even the band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. And of course we know that seven times is 7 years. This is the interpretation, O King, and this is the decree of the Most High which has come upon my Lord the King, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree, roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, King, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. So Daniel's giving him the interpretation. He's calling him to repent. He's saying, break off your sins by doing righteousness, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. All this came upon the king, Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. He apparently forgot all about the dream after a year. The king spoke and said, is not this great kingdom Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power? Apparently, he forgot about the dream and about learning who really rules in heaven and who sets up the basis men. He's here bragging on himself, walking through, sticking his thumbs in his armpits, going, yeah, I'm the man. Isn't it I who've done this? Right? He's forgotten already. That tells you about the character of this man. Why I say it's unlikely we're going to see this man in the resurrection. And he's going, I have built the house of my kingdom by the might of my power for the honor of my majesty. And while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, seven times shall pass over thee, until thou knowest that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men. He did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to heaven, and my understanding and returned unto me. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and my brightness returned to me, and my counselors and my lord sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. You never know. There's hope for anyone, but it's unlikely. Belteshazzar, the king, made a great feast to the thousands of his lords and drank wine before the thousand. This is Belshazzar, the king. His name is like the name they gave Daniel, who is Belteshazzar. And this is Belshazzar, the king. So I guess we're done with Nebuchadnezzar for now. That's it. So perhaps Nebuchadnezzar ended on a good note. Perhaps he continued to recognize, or perhaps he fell back You know, I mean, who wouldn't straighten out if they had experienced what Nebuchadnezzar has experienced? But I remember what Yahushua said to his disciples, and as when one of them said, unless I see, I won't believe, you know. Yahushua said, blessed are those who believe having not seen. And, you know, that's us. We haven't seen these things. We didn't see the Messiah. We weren't able to stick our fingers in the nail holes and thrust our hand into his side or see the nail scars on his feet. We didn't see those things. We haven't seen mighty miracles. And we haven't passed through the fire of a fiery furnace without being burnt. But yet we believe, and because we have something. We have the Spirit of Truth living in us. We've crossed a border, not an imaginary border like the kingdoms of men out here. They've drawn imaginary lines on the ground, and they put fences and crossing gates and guards at these imaginary lines that they've drawn on his earth. But he sets up the kingdoms, and he puts the basest men in power. And I mean, that is obvious from the idiots that we have that running the nations around here and up in the Congress, that he puts the basest men in the power over the nations of the earth, and he does it to work out his purpose and for his own purposes. So now we're on Daniel chapter 5 verse 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to the thousands of his lord, and drank wine before the thousand. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple. So here we have Belshazzar, the son of Nebuchadnezzar. He's now the king. His father had taken the vessels out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. And they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. And the same hour came forth the fingers of a man's hand, and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw part of the hand that wrote. Well, you know, they're drinking, everybody's, pretty much blasted, I guess, and partying, and all of a sudden they see the same hand over on the wall where the light is and the candlestick, and it's writing on the wall. What would you think? You had a little too much to drink, perhaps. So anyway, they see it. And the king's countenance was changed. Yes, I could imagine. He probably turned white as a ghost, as the saying goes. And his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. And here's a man in terrible fear. I mean, he's just shaking all over. Shaking so bad that he probably wet his pants too. And the king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. This all sounds so familiar, doesn't it? Like father, like son. And the king spoke and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show thee the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then came in all the wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came unto the banquet house, and the queen spoke unto him and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in your kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans and soothsayers, for as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show you the interpretation. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spoke and said unto Daniel, Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Yehuda, whom the king my father brought out of Yehudim? It says jewelry here, but really Yehudim is the Hebrew word there. I have even heard of thee. So he said, yeah, I heard of you. That's right, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that the light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought before me that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. I have heard of thee that thou can make the interpretations dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shalt be third ruler in the kingdom. And Daniel answered and said before the king, Let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. Thou, O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and a majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he slew, and whom he kept alive, and whom he set up, and whom he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was disposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all these things. But you have lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent forth from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written. It says, Mene, 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 tekel, upharsin. And I'm not sure that I'm pronouncing that correctly here. Let's see. Mene, mene, tekel, and upharsin. It actually says paras for upharsin. I don't know how they translated it, upharsin. It means to divide. So in the Chaldee, it's upharsin, I suppose. Anyway, he goes on. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, God has numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Too late. Too late, huh? In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So we got a 62-year-old man. Darius the Mede came in and had Belshazzar slain, slain, and he took the kingdom away from him. And, well, we've seen that in the image, didn't we? That the head of gold, that was Nebuchadnezzar. There was that's where it ended for Babylon. His son didn't get a kingdom. Basically, it was over very quickly for his son. That was the end of it. And then the Medes and the Persians came in, and he was slain that night. So, anyway, we have here, going into chapter 6 now, and the end of Darius the Mede took the kingdom, and he was 62 years old. That ends chapter 5 at verse 31, and we're going into chapter 6. And it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first, that the princes might give accounts unto them. And it's pretty easy to set up Daniel. I mean, Daniel's the guy, he's already there. And he's already in charge of everything. And, you know, here comes the next king, you know, the next ruler in this heathen government. You know, just one has conquered another. And the government's already there, and it's a lot less work for Darius to just set up these princes and these presidents over the kingdom. So he does it. And Daniel, it says here in verse 2, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. That means it's not going to cost him anything. And then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no occasion nor fault. Forasmuch as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. So you have Daniel, I mean, just a totally righteous man. You know, again, I guess against most men, you could find some dirt. You know, they're trying to dig up the dirt, as they say in the political circles today, when you have someone who's running for an office or president or whatever, you'll have his opponents out there trying to dig up the dirt on him to see what they can find against him. Because, you know, if you dig deep enough, you usually can find something. Because the world is full of ungodly men, and they live ungodly lives, and they do ungodly things. And if they don't cover their tracks real well, usually there's something that can be found. But they couldn't dig up any dirt on Daniel. So, not because they couldn't dig up any dirt on him, I guess they're going to have to invent some dirt, or make some, or get some false witnesses, which is usually, that's usually plan B. But anyway, we'll jump back in here. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And there you go, they found the key, because they see that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they wouldn't disobey the law of their God. And Daniel, of course, he wouldn't eat the king's dainties. So, you know, he would do whatever was required of him by the governors or these base men that the Heavenly Father set up to rule in the kingdom, unless, of course, they required him to break God's law. And so they were looking for to set up a rule or make a law that would require Daniel to break God's law. And now that's their new plan. And I'll tell you, that's Satan's plan. And we're going to discuss that a little bit more, how he has implemented that plan, even today, in the nation where I live. Although it's still all voluntary, so it seems like it always has to be voluntary, even if you think it's mandatory. Sometimes you need to look a little deeper into the things that you're doing.